Ladies and gentlemen, good evening and welcome to INWIT First Quarter 2017 Financial Results Conference Call. Michele Vitale, Head of Investor Relations, will introduce the event. Mr. Vitale, please.
Ladies and gentlemen, good evening. Our CEO, Mr. Oscar Cecchetti, and our CFO, Mr. Raffaele Perrino, will provide you with an update of our first quarter 2017 operating and financial performance. The presentation will be followed by a Q&A session. Please take note of our disclaimer policy that you should now see on slide two. Let me highlight that the reported data refer to the financial statement at March 31st, 2017. Let's go through the presentation in detail, starting with slide three. Having achieved good economic result in 2016, INWIT is now continuing along its path of growth, diversification, and efficiency. Our equity story, based on the daily extracting more value from the asset we own and on enriching our portfolio of asset and services, lead us in the right direction and allow us to confirm our low teens target. As you can see in this quick result overview, first quarter result see us on the right track. Both the operating and financial result set for the future of the company have been delivered. The tenancy ratio increased to 1.75 times, and revenue grew by 5.8% compared with the first quarter of the previous year. Moreover, the efficiency plan is in line with our expectation, as demonstrated by the 5% year-over-year lease cost reduction. The investment program is being deployed in line with the plan, following our strict double-digit IRR policy. As a result, the EBITDA trend was once again double-digit. This quarter, the year-over-year growth is 14%. Now, I'd like to leave the floor to Mr. Oscar Cecchetti, who will guide you through the main highlight of our first quarter result. Later, Mr. Perrino will provide you with an in-depth analysis of our year-to-date financial result. As usual, the presentation will be followed by a Q&A session. I will now hand it over to Oscar.
Thank you, Michele. Thank you, everybody, for staying with us, even if it's Friday afternoon, very close to the weekend. Let's start talking about the main profit and loss key figures. Revenues. As you can see in slide number five, the total first quarter revenues account for euro 86.4 million and continued to increase by approximately 6% year-on-year. This result was driven by three main components of revenues. Revenues deriving from the master service agreement with TIM for the sites inherited with the IPO. Those revenues increased by 2%, as stated in the contract. Let me remind you that from 2018 onward, the escalator will be 100% of the CPI, while for this year, for 2017, it was predefined at 2%. The new sites, the second component, are yielding additional revenues amounting to 0.9 million euro for this quarter. This comes from the contribution of roughly 170 new sites. The third component are revenues from other operators, are also proceeding in the double-digit growth path. Third-party revenues totaling 21 million this quarter, showing a 15.4% increase versus the first quarter of 2016, and an increase of 37.3% versus the first quarter of 2015 pro forma. Continuing with slide number six, it's important to highlight that the tenancy ratio increased further to 1.75. As you remember, we started at 1.55, and we are increasing at a pace of 1/10 per year. This result was reached thanks to the increase of tenants other than TIM and the progression of the decommissioning plan. At the bottom of the slide, you can see the all tenants evolution and how we keep increasing our customer base quarter after quarter. Indeed, in the last 3 months, we reached 8,700 tenants by adding 300 additional tenants. All in all, this trend confirms the quality of our assets as well as our capability to attract radio players on our infrastructures. On the right-hand side, you can see the evolution of the total number of sites. While roughly 20 sites have been newly built this quarter, about 100 have either been completely dismantled or are being dismantled. Let's move now on OPEX and our efficiency plan. In slide 7, you find an overview of the efficiencies achieved in operating expenses. The total OPEX amount to 42.1 million and show a progressive reduction of approximately 0.7 million versus the first quarter 2016 figures and roughly 3 million compared with the first quarter of 2015 pro forma figures. By breaking down the OPEX number, the chart shows that first ground lease, that ground lease cost decreased by 4.8% compared to those of the first quarter of 2016 and by almost 12% compared to the first quarter of 2015 pro forma. This is the result of the renegotiation and land acquisition plans, as well as the decommissioning. We shouldn't forget here that the results also include the additional costs of newly built sites that are starting to become material. The benefits from the ground lease cost reduction plan were slightly diminished by other operating expenses and personnel costs needed to support our revenue growth. This increase is mainly related to the startup of new businesses, such as small cell and backhauling. Let's now move forward with slide 8, which focuses on increasing efficiencies achieved for ground lease costs. As already said, the main sources for the cost-cutting activity remain decommissioning, renegotiation of contracts, and acquisition of lands. As regards the commissioning plan, we have already dismantled roughly 600 sites, equivalent to 43% of the total target, and I remind you that is 1,400. These results come from the 7% dismantled in 2015, the 29% dismantled in 2016, there were about 400 sites, and an additional 7%, roughly 100 sites, dismantled during this first quarter of 2017. Moving on to the renegotiations, we reached 49% of the addressable target. 2,000 contracts have been renegotiating during 2015, 900 during 2016, and 200 in the first quarter of this year. More than half of the potential target is still addressable, even though, as highlighted many times, is getting tougher every quarter. Lastly, considering both land acquisition and long-term right of usage of rooftops, we signed roughly 100 contracts in 2015, roughly 300 during 2016, and about 30 during the first quarter of 2017. This means that we are just slightly lagging behind compared to our target of 1.3-1.5 deals for the end of 2018. But we are confident we will be able to fill the gap and hit the target. The implementation of our plans is well portrayed on slide 9, which shows the two most relevant KPIs, revenues from OLOS and the average lease cost evolution. On the left, you can appreciate the meaningful increase in both OLOs and new sites revenues. We posted, considering the two revenue sources, plus 19% year on year, from 18.4 million euro in the first quarter of 2016 to 21.9 million euro in the first quarter of 2017. On the right, we show the positive impact that decommissioning, contract renegotiation and land acquisition had on the ground lease costs. The result is visible in the reduction of the average ground lease cost, which reached 12.8 thousand euro per site in this first quarter versus the 13.5 thousand in the first quarter 2016 and the initial 14.5 thousand. Now let me recap with slide number 10 what we envisaged for each acceleration plan project and the current stage of development. In general, you can see that though at different speeds, we are progressing in every single area. Regarding the 500 new sites forecast for 2018, 17% are under construction, 21% are under negotiation, and 29% have been booked. In summary, we are already working on more than 300 sites, equivalent to 67% of the 2018 target. Moving to the small cell, we reached 37% of the total card, the total target. 5% small cell are either on air or under construction. 11% are under negotiation and 21% are booked. So out of the 4,000 remote units targeted by 2018, we are currently working on more than 1,000. Finally, let's talk about the fiber backhauling. We plan to build more than 1,000 sites by 2018. Here we have 6% of the fiber connection already booked, 4% under negotiation, and 1% under construction, totaling 11% of project already in progress. With the backhauling, as expected, we were slower compared with the other new business, as we had to review and industrialize the internal processes required to build and sell fiber connections. In the next two slides, I'd like to give you some more details about our small cell business. In slide number 11, I want to focus first on our offers and our technology platforms, the top of the slides. We offer two different services, 4G small cell, typically mono-tenant, and distributed antenna system, multi-tenant by definition. The platform for 4G small cell includes backhauling, infrastructure, and active remote unit, directly connected to the core network of the operators. For the distributed antenna system, in addition to those things, we also provide a centralized equipment and the hosting of our customers' access nodes. With hundreds of projects currently being deployed, we understand that even though we are at the beginning of a long journey, we are moving in the right direction. As a matter of fact, all the metrics are aligned to what we forecast. Unitary capex are in the 10-20 kilo euro area, exactly as forecast. Revenues per remote units are in the range of 3,000-7,000 euro per remote unit, again as we forecasted, and the EBITDA margin of the project is absolutely not dilutive versus the actual business. So all in all, we are delivering more than 10% of IRR for all running projects. It's worth mentioning the most relevant new contract that we signed. I can mention the Isozaki Tower, the highest Italian building owned by Allianz, the Amante Tower, another big building used by BNP Paribas, relevant hospitals like Gemelli in Rome, and some relevant touristic resorts like Cervia and Sperlonga beaches. The next slide, slide 12, is about the prospect of this new business. We believe that this technology will be increasingly used in the evolution of 4G and in the preparation for 5G. There are two main drivers pushing up the request for small cell from the mobile operators. The first is growth of data consumption per user that will soon become even more relevant than now. Such expected growth will force the operators to increase the number of POPs even in the 4G environment. The second is new frequencies that will impact the mobile network architectures in the 5G scenario. 5G will require many technological innovations, but among others, new spectrum resources, hundreds of megahertz per operator. And those hundreds of megahertz will be available on new ranges of frequencies higher than the ones currently used by the operator. Higher frequency translates into shorter radius of coverage, as you can see from the qualitative graph on the right of the slide, and finally, into a huge number of POPs, especially in overcrowded urban areas. I can mention that in the recent article of the IEEE community, we read that in a 5G fully deployed scenario, more than 10 small per each macro will be needed. So with this, I'd like now to leave the floor to Rafael Perrino, who will give you a detailed overview of the first quarter economic and financial aspects. Rafael.
Thank you, Oscar, and good afternoon to you all. Let me introduce the analysis of the main KPIs of the first quarter 2017 on slide 14. Revenues stand at €86.4 million, and with OPEX at €42.1 million, the resulting EBITDA is €44.3 million. Once again, this is the highest quarterly net income since the company incorporation, when it amounted to €28.9 million. Analyzing this data in more detail, we have a good top-line performance with a revenue increase of 5.8% versus the first quarter of 2016. In terms of EBITDA, we posted a robust increase of 13.9% versus Q1 16. Let me highlight that despite our business enlargement, our costs are constantly decreasing, and in particular, let me focus on the OPEX components. The lease cost fell by 4.8% year-on-year, with a €1.7 million reduction. Personnel cost increased by €0.3 million year-on-year, mainly due to the increase in the headcount dedicated to new businesses. Other costs increased by another €0.7 million year-on-year. So, total operating costs decreased by €0.7 million year-on-year, equivalent to -1.6%. As expected, net financial interest for the period amounted to €0.9 million, in line with what we recorded in the first quarter of 2016. This quarter, P&L taxes were equal to €11.5 million, so our net income for the period amounted to €28.9 million, increasing by 23% compared to Q1 16. Considering that in these 3 months investments accounted for €6.8 million, the operating free cash flow, EBITDA minus CapEx, equaled €37.5 million. To better recap our growth trend, on slide 15, we describe our EBITDA driving factor with a qualitative graph. Our EBITDA has a solid base thanks to high-quality assets inherited from TIM at incorporation, and its growth component is a mix of asset efficiencies, both on revenues and OPEX, and the enlargement of the business as a result of new investments. To drive our EBITDA growth, we are extracting as much value as we can from the actual portfolio by both increasing the tenancy ratio and applying the CPI escalator, and by cutting lease costs through contract renegotiation and the dismantling of sites. And to keep growing in the long term, we are obviously expanding our portfolio by investing in both the traditional business, building new macro towers and acquiring lands, and the new one, well described by Oscar before, small cell and fiber backhauling. With slide 16, we want to draw your attention to our EBITDA margin and its breakdown. As you can see, the EBITDA margin has always been increasing, starting from 44.9% in full year 14 pro forma and closing at 51.3% in Q1 17. This strong EBITDA growth was due to the combined effect of OPEX efficiency and tenancy increase. The EBITDA increase generated by our OPEX efficiency plan that focused on site portfolio optimization and ground lease renegotiations went from an upside of 2.9% in the full year 16 pro forma to a 3.3% increase in Q1 17. And again, the EBITDA ramp up due to an increase in all those tenancies went from 3.3% in full year 16 pro forma to 5.1% in Q1 17, thanks to a strong commercial effort for both traditional and new services. Finally, in the chart, you can see how the EBITDA margin is highly correlated to the tenancy ratio. On slide 17, you can see a drill down of quarterly net income of 28.9 million euro that grew by 23% when compared with Q1 16. This increase mainly comes from a 5.8% increase in revenues and a 1.6% decrease in operating expenses, leading to a 51.3% EBITDA margin. Our EBIT margin amounts to 47.8%, a best-in-class result. Let me highlight that the tax rate for 2017 has declined by 3.5% due to a reduction of the Italian IRES tax from 27.5% to 24%. Consequently, taxes for the first quarter 17 accounted for 11.5 million euro with an implicit tax rate of 28.4%. Net income for the first 3 months of 2017 stood at 28.9 million euro, equal to a 19.3 euro cent per share on an annual basis, increasing by 23% compared with Q1 16. Now, let me show you the cash flow at the end of a quarter. We are on slide 18. In the first 3 months, we invested 6.8 million euro fully dedicated to land acquisition and long-term right of usage, as well as new businesses such as small cells and new sites. Even though we had no maintenance capex in the first quarter, we confirm the 5 million euro investment for the full year as we indicated in our business plan. This quarter, our EBITDA minus CAPEX amounted to 37.5 million euro. Moreover, in this quarter, we reported an increase in net working capital of 21.5 million euro, primarily due to an increase of 22 million euro in receivables. As you already saw in 2016, receivable undergo a seasonal swing that leads to a negative first quarter. Moreover, as you can see, there has been no taxes cash out in this first quarter. However, please note that the 2016 taxes to be paid in 2017 amount to 19 million euro. The first 2017 tranche to be paid in the second quarter 2017 amount to 18 million euro, while the second tranche will be 27 million euro. Finally, we delivered a positive cash flow to equity amounting to 15.6 million euro. On slide 19, we provide an overview of our balance sheet at March 2017. Net debt amounted to 18.7 million euro with a 14.7 million euro quarterly decrease. The current situation leads to a net debt on an annualized EBITDA ratio of about 0.1 times. Lastly, the fully distributable reserves at quarter end equaled 764 million euro, corresponding to approximately 1.3 euro per share.
Oscar, Rafael, thank you, and now we can open the Q&A session.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Q&A session is now open. I'd like to remind you that if you want to register for your questions, please press star followed by 1. To cancel the reservation, press star followed by 2. Thank you. The question comes from Mr. Simon Coles from Barclays. Mr. Coles, please.
Hi, thank you for taking the question. It's Simon Coles from Barclays. My first is on the average land lease cost reduction. We've seen that fall to 12.8 this quarter. I was just wondering how much further we think that can go, and is there maybe an acceleration coming as some of the lease cost reduction plans start to feed through? Secondly, on small cells, I was just wondering, are you seeing any increase in appetite from operators lately or from customers and buildings wanting to have small cells inserted into their buildings? And then lastly, we've seen Crown Castle being a big advocate of small cells in the US, and they've bought more fiber assets recently. I was just wondering what your thoughts are on fiber assets. Are there any in Italy that you could potentially buy, or is Italy a unique market because you have a number of operators rolling out fiber? Thank you.
Thank you for the for the question. Let's start from the first point, the lease cost. It seems to me that we are on track on all the driver that for the reduction. The decommissioning is going more or less in line with the plan. We are at 43% of the plan. Renegotiation, as I told you, we already have a couple of thousand of addressable contracts that we will try to renegotiate. The only, I think, item that we should highlight it is not fully in line with our linear progression is the acquisition of lands and long-term right of usage. We signed just 30 contracts. I have to say that first we were under pressure for the end of the year, and now I do believe that in the coming months, as I was saying in the presentation, we will be able to fill the gap. So all in all, if you look at the result in absolute terms, so the reduction in the total amount of lease cost, I want to highlight that in this we have also to take into account that we have 170 new sites that are giving revenues, and on the other hand we are paying the lease for those sites. So looking at the total cost, the total OPEX for leasing, we have to take into account the reduction brought by the negotiation, land acquisition and decommissioning, and the increase that is related to the new contracts for the new sites. The trend for the unitary lease cost continued to decrease, and this is relevant. Again, I think that we have some seasonalities in this trend, but in any case, we are absolutely confident that we can reach our target. The second question is about small cell. Here we have to say that the operators are becoming more and more sensitive to the need for this new technology. The most relevant proof is the plan of our anchor tenant, of our main customer TIM, that was exactly one of the drivers of our business acceleration announced in July last year. TIM decided to put on air many thousands of small cell in a 2-3 year plan. So all in all, I do believe that all the operators are looking at this new technology as a relevant, let's say, tool for managing the growth of data, for going through the evolution of 4G, and for the preparation of for the 5G. The third is about fiber. So first, our first objective is to connect 1,000 of our existing sites. And of course, the new sites we will build up. So for those sites, in principle, when we decide to analyze a single project, we first, of course, look for existing assets. But in general, if in those sites there is not yet a fiber connection, this means that there is not fiber close to the site. So in principle, for each project, we will be laying cables, digging laying cables, and connecting the sites. If your question were in general of existing assets of fiber in Italy, I have to say that there are several assets that are mainly in the long distance connections. There are assets on the highway, on the small streets, and there are few assets in the city rings, in the metropolitan area.
That's excellent, super clear. Thank you very much.
Next question comes from Mr. Giles Thorne from Jefferies. Mr. Thorne, please.
Thank you. I had a couple of questions too, please. We've obviously seen Cellnex today announce their framework agreement with Iliad for their deployment of a network in Italy. I'm guessing by a process of elimination, you haven't signed such a framework agreement, but it'd be useful just to get that confirmation. And if indeed you haven't signed a framework agreement, given you were quite clear that you were in a dialogue with Iliad, it'd be interesting to understand why you think you haven't signed one and yet Cellnex has. So sorry for the convoluted question there, but I hope that makes sense. And secondly, I also wanted to pick up on the fiber question previously and expand on it a little bit, because the Crown Castle approach is to find high-density fiber deployments in high-density urban areas and use that as a fantastic candidate for putting a small cell network on top of it, which is a much more fiber-led small cell investment rather than kind of a demand-led small cell investment that you've articulated. So do you see a change coming where you will be more fiber-led? And given you have you sit within the same building or you sit within the same group as the telecom incumbent in Italy, do you find yourself able to direct or influence where and when TI does lay its fiber? Because TI has obviously been fantastically active on fiber deployment. Hopefully that makes sense too. Thank you.
Thank you for the two questions. First, we didn't sign any agreement, any framework agreement with Cellnex. We do believe that the deployment of the network of these operators will take time. So there are no news. We will announce when we will make announcement where we have something to announce. Even taking into account that usually the framework agreement in our experience could mean to recognize discounts. So to that extent, we are ready. As we said, new clients could be an opportunity for all the infrastructure owners. And so that's it, nothing more than that. The second is fiber. You're right, the small cell, first of all, let me explain what we usually do in the small cell. We decide case by case. First, we see that there is there are available fiber connection in the area where we are interested in. In such areas, we could find fiber owned by operators or all owned by, in some cases, municipalities, utilities. So, in those cases, if we see that there are fiber available, we buy fiber to connect our small cell. In many cases, talking about the fiber for the backhauling of macro sites, let's say coming back to the point I was highlighting in the previous questions. Talking about the 1,000 fiber connection for our sites, I know that in those sites, in principle, there were not available fiber cable close to the sites. And the proof of that is that the operators are not yet using fiber for connecting the sites. So in the majority of those cases, confirming that we case by case we look for existing assets, if any, but I do believe that in those cases, in the majority of those cases, we will be forced to lay cables. This was my previous answer. I don't know if I properly answered your question.
I think so. You've certainly expanded on it. If I could come back to the first question about the framework agreement, please excuse the direct question, but do you think the fact that you sit within the TI group limits your relevance to Iliad as a potential tower partner?
Let me say that we are an independent company. As we many times restated it, we are an independent company. We work for the benefit of all our shareholders. In all our decisions, we have the majority of the board that is composed by independent directors. So we can say that whatever we do is in the interest of all our shareholders. Don't have doubts about it.
That's fine. It wasn't governance independence. It was, it doesn't matter. We can move on. Thank you.
Next question comes from Mr. Parin Shah from Bank of America. Mr. Parin Shah, please.
Thanks a lot, guys, and happy Friday. Just a couple of questions. On the fiber point that you were just talking about, is it the case that INWIT is the party actually digging the fiber and laying it and essentially owner of the assets, or are you taking out long-term leases from Telecom Italia? And then my second question was just regarding kind of comments made by American Tower most recently at a conference, I think held by a competitor. They were talking about how it's incredibly difficult to find assets in Europe that have no broadcast exposure and are growing revenues, EBITDA meaningfully. And clearly you're one of those companies, and one of the only companies of that nature that has a scale portfolio in a major market. Do you think that American Tower could take a strategic stake in Inuit over time? Just wondering what your thoughts are on that. Thanks.
Yes, the first question is very easy. No, when we look for the backhauling, we do not use lease from the operators. In case of leasing, of course, you know that for the fiber, the typical way to buy fiber is long-term right of use, the IRU. When we deploy small cell project, we can use IRU for the backhauling. But when we want to connect a site, take into account that we want to sell IRU to our customer, the only way for us to make the investment is to lay cable. So we will never, let's say, in the large majority of the cases, we will be laying cable and not buying IRUs. The second is, yes, we are growing. I do believe that I think that from the IPO onward, we always said that we do believe that is the organic way for creating value. So we do believe that there are many opportunities for an organic value creation, and of course, the results are telling us that we were right, because we have been able to get all the opportunities that are in the Italian market, all the opportunities to have a strong relationship with the main mobile operator, of course, first of all, TIM and also the other, and we have the we have good assets. So the reason why, the main reason why we do believe that the organic way to create value is the preferred one, is because we do have high quality asset compared with the other. Having said that, of course, we are managing the company and not the share. But in this case, I think that this company could be interested for all the potential investors.
Great, thank you. And just, can I just add one question on Iliad? Because, you know, the framework agreement, Cellnex, I guess, clarified on the call that it's not necessarily a contract. Do you think that, you know, Iliad remains a party that you're able to do significant business with? And, you know, do you think that you can win significant volume from Iliad over time? And, I mean, are you hesitant to move by Iliad to use signing of multiple contracts, multiple framework agreements, as a negotiating tactic?
I continue to believe that it's really too early today to answer your question and to deal with this issue. We don't know what kind of plan the carrier, the fourth mobile operator, have in Italy. As you know, they have some relevant atout to play that are related to the virtual network operator agreement with Wind and Tree. They have the possibility to use the RAN sharing. It's likely that they will start with a virtual approach for the services, but I do believe that talking about something that is not clear, that didn't happen and is not happening now, I think is really too early.
Very clear, thank you.
Next question comes from Mr. Riccardo Boada from Morgan Stanley. Mr. Boada, please.
Hi, good afternoon, everyone. So I have a couple of questions. The first one, do you see the potential to emulate Cellnex with the agreement they recently signed with, I believe it was a Spanish real estate company, to provide small cells in their portfolio? Is there a company that fits this profile in Italy? And then secondly, it's been a long time since we last, it's been a few weeks since we last heard an update on the EI Towers Railway in with potential consolidation in the press. Can you confirm if anything has changed? Thanks.
We have a lot of agreements with building owners, with utilities. So I think that it's not worth mentioning those agreements before they really come to be relevant for the growth in the small cell. We have a lot of agreements. I do believe that now we have to consider that we are at a very early stage of the small cell. So what we see is that first we look for locations where the multi-operator small cell, the distributed antenna system, are needed because of the relevance of the locations. So in this we are absolutely looking at the single areas, and of course area by area, one by one, we will be looking if the agreements, if all the framework agreement that we have with the building owner and other could work or not. So it's a sort of cherry picking, location by location. On the other hand, the mono-operator small cell are a consequence of specific request from the operator. The consolidation is very easy. No, no news. Of course, we restate that we are an ideal partner for the consolidation in whatever manner it will happen. We have very, very appealing to that extent financial flexibility. We are interested in growing in telecom tower, so whatever telecom tower assets come to the market, we are invested in, we are interested in, but just press, nothing more than gossiping on the press.
Okay, thanks very much.
Next question comes from Mr. Max Gilbert from New Street Research. Mr. Gilbert, please.
Hi, thanks for the question. So I see in slide 15 you've now got EBITDA growth to continue in high teens post 2019. I guess I just want to be interesting to find out, you know, what's driving that. Is it the small cells? Is it the increase in macro cells? Yeah, a little bit around that would be very interesting. Second one is just on the, you said you're going to pick up the slack on land acquisitions. I mean, does that mean you're going to be paying less, or are you going to continue the same economics? Thanks.
Sorry, I didn't switch on the microphone. So I do believe that with the projects that we have already been launching, we are paving the way for the future growth of the company, and for giving the company the possibility to continue its trend of growth and value creation even from 2019 onward. The name of the game after the 2019, of course, is small cell. I do believe that fiber backhauling is something that will continue, but of course, once we have reached 100% of the target, there is no way to continue to grow. If we consider what we have been talking about on the small cell, we should see a lot of deployment, an increasing number of remote units in the 4G and more in the 5G. If you can see the public figures about the non-residential small cell shipments that we reported from a qualitative point of view in the slides, they say that this those equipment will be shipped at with a growth of 30% year on year. So I think that the name of the game for the future growth is related to the small cell.
Okay, thanks. And on the land acquisitions?
Land acquisition, no, we continue to have our policy. Our offer, our maximum of our offer is 7 times the annual fee that we pay to the landlord. This is something that continue to work because even of the some of the tax benefit for the landlord, and we are continuing with our approach. I do believe that the small number of the first quarter this year is something that will be recovered in the coming quarters, and I feel confident to confirm the target of 1.3, 1.5 land or rooftop acquired for the end of 2018.
Thanks. I'm sorry, I actually have one more follow-up, if you don't mind. Appreciate it's late on a Friday. Again, with regard to the small cells, so the 21% you highlight in slide 10 as requested, I mean, what exactly does that mean? Is that MNOs approaching you? I mean, do you expect to get 100% win rate on the 21%? Thanks.
The two things. The first is that the MNO are interested in. So the MNO told us that they are ready to buy something in those locations. And for this reason, we say that we consider this as booked. Let's say that if we were able to find the locations, to sign the agreement with the location owner, and to propose it, to come back with the commercial proposal, for sure we will have orders and small cell on EOS.
Okay, very good. Thank you very much.
The last question comes from Mr. Jonathan Dunn from RBC. Mr. Jonathan Dunn, please.
Hi there. Two questions. On the tenant growth of 300,000, could you just remind us what the mix of wireless local loop versus, I guess, mobile operator in that number? And then secondly, a follow-on on the small cells. Of the 37% of the 4,000, what percentage of that sort of roughly 1,000, what percentage of those small cell nodes have a second tenant or a second tenant interested? Like how's it going getting sort of leasing up those?
Thank you, Dan. The first question is that we have a mix. The new tenants are mainly wireless local loop operator, IoT players, and there is a mix of tenants. What we are seeing is that the main source of new commercial deals comes from wireless local loop operators and IoT players. Even though the other operators continue to be active, mainly Vodafone as our second customer. As far as the breakdown of small cell is concerned, I have to say that in all our DAS project, we have at least 2 tenants. In some cases, we have 3, but usually the majority is 2. So we have 2 point something, but we do not have 1 project with just 1 tenant.
And what's the, can I ask 2 follow-ups? What's the mix of DAS versus small cell in those numbers?
What is that? Sorry?
What's roughly speaking, is it 50-50, the mix of DAS versus small cell?
If we consider all the number, so if we consider the around 1,000 small that we have considering the really under construction, targeted under negotiation or requested, is I think that we have the majority of those small cell are mono, but there is also a relevant percentage of distributed antenna system.
Okay. And then while I've got the line, the wireless local loop players in Italy, do they also own sort of high frequency, like 28 gigahertz millimeter wave spectrum, as some of them do in the UK?
No, not yet. They are working on the traditional WiMAX frequencies.
Okay, excellent. Have a lovely weekend.
Thank you. You too, Dan.
Thank you.
Thank you, John. Thank you all for joining us and for your interest in our conference call. As you have seen, once again, we presented another good set of results, which I hope you appreciated. Thank you again. Have a great weekend.
Thank you. Bye. Have a good weekend.
Ladies and gentlemen, the conference is over. Thank you for calling INWIT.